properties or farmlands or roads, no lights or radio communications. But the planet truly was a new Earth, unpopulated, virginal, beckoning. Impatient to explore this new world in greater detail, the International Astronautical Authority asked the World Council to fund the human exploration of Sirius C. The Council procrastinated, citing the enormous costs of mitigating the disasters caused by the global climate shift. Then the lunar nation of Selene stepped forward and offered to build a starship. Shamed into grudging cooperation, the Council reluctantly joined the effort, meagerly. They named the starship Gaia, after the Earth deity who represented the web of life. Gaia would travel to Sirius more slowly than the robotic probes to protect its fragile human cargo. It would take some 80 years for the ship to reach Sirius C. Men and women from all around the world volunteered for the mission. They were carefully screened for physical health and mental stability. As one of the examining psychotechnicians put it, "You'd have to be at least a little crazy to throw away 80 years just to get there." But the crew of Gaia would not age 80 years. They would sleep away the decades of their journey in cryonic suspension, frozen in liquid nitrogen, as close to death as human bodies can get and still survive. Gaia was launched with great fanfare. Humankind's first mission to the stars. The explorers would spend 5 years mapping the planet in detail, studying its biosphere, and building a base for the backup missions to work from. By the time the ship arrived in orbit around Sirius C, 80 years later, only a handful of dedicated scientists were still interested in the mission. Most of the human race was struggling to survive the catastrophic second wave of greenhouse flooding as the ice caps of Greenland and Antarctica melted down. The backup missions had been postponed again and again, and finally shelved indefinitely by the World Council. Even the eagerly waiting scientists saw nothing, heard nothing from the explorers, for it would take more than 8 years for messages to travel from Sirius back to Earth. Alone. Alone in the wardroom, Jordan poured himself another cup of tea, then sat at one of the tables and stared in fascination at the planet sliding by in the wall screen's display. "It certainly looks like Earth," he thought. The data bar running along the base of the screen showed that the planet's atmosphere was astonishingly close to Earth's. 22% oxygen, 76% nitrogen, the remaining 2% a smattering of carbon dioxide, water vapor, and inert gases. The biggest difference from Earth was that Sirius C had a much thicker ozone layer high in its atmosphere. Not unexpected, since the star Sirius emitted much more ultraviolet light than the sun. Jordan shook his head in wonder. "It's like a miracle," he said to himself. "Too good to be true." But then he realized that this was the first planet orbiting another star that human eyes had seen close up. What do we know about exoplanets? Perhaps Earth-like worlds are commonplace. Enough speculation, he told himself. Get to work. Time to go to the command center and see what the mission controllers have to say to us. Clasping his half-finished mug of tea in one hand, Jordan went back into the passageway and walked to the command center. It was a smallish compartment with a horseshoe of 6 workstation consoles curving around a single high-backed chair whose arms were studded with control buttons. Display screens covered the bulkheads, most of them showing the condition and performance of the ship's various systems. Others offered views of the planet they orbited. Jordan slipped into the command chair and frowned briefly at the keypads set into its armrests. He tried to remember which ones activated the communications system. The symbols on each pad had always reminded him of children's sketches. The propulsion system symbol was a triangle with wavy lines emanating from it. Life support, a heart shape. Communications was the headset symbol, he recalled. Touching that pad, Jordan called for the latest message from Earth. He reminded himself that the message he was about to see was sent from Earth more than 8 years ago. It takes messages 8.6 years to travel from Earth to Sirius. A woman's face appeared on the main screen above the row of consoles. She was a handsome woman, with dark hair pulled tightly back off her face. Strong cheekbones and a fine, straight nose. Her eyes were large, and so deeply brown they looked almost black, and unutterably sorrowful. I am Felicia Ionescu, the newly appointed director of the International Astronautical Authority, she said, in a carefully measured alto register. This message is being sent to reach you on the day that your ship attains orbit around the planet Sirius C. Recorded more than 8 years ago, Jordan repeated to himself. I hope that you have all survived the flight to Sirius, and that you are well, and ready to begin the exploration of the planet. Jordan thought her welcoming message was strangely heavy, bleak. Where's the congratulations? Where are the clichés about how all of Earth is thrilled that you've reached your destination? When you departed from Earth, Ionescu went on, 80 years ago, we were recovering from the worldwide flooding caused by the global greenhouse warming. She took in a breath. Unfortunately, now, 80 years later, a new wave of flooding has struck, caused by the continued warming of the global climate. Her image disappeared, replaced by pictures of devastation. Cities drowned, coastlines inundated, storms lashing fleeing refugees. Jordan stared in open-mouthed horror. Because of these calamities, Ionescu's voice said over the views of disaster, the World Council has been unable to authorize the backup missions that were in the IAA's original program plan. The screen showed her face once more. She looked miserable. I will work to my utmost to get the World Council to fund backup missions eventually. But for the present, you 12 members of the Gaia mission are alone in your exploration of Sirius C. I wish you well. And her image winked off. The news from Earth. For long moments, Jordan sat in the command chair, shocked beyond words. He could feel his heart thudding beneath his ribs, his stomach roiling. Alone, he thought. At last he pulled himself to his feet. Very well then, he told himself. Alone. We have everything we need for a 5-year stay at Sirius C. We'll do the best we can with what we've got, and then we'll go home. Yes, he thought. Now to break the cheery news to the rest of the team. As resolutely as he could manage, Jordan marched back to the wardroom. Only one other person was there, Mitchell Thornberry, the roboticist, standing before the wall screen display of New Earth. Hello, Mitchell. Thornberry turned to face Jordan, a wide smile breaking across his fleshy face. Top of the morning to you. He was a solidly built man from the University of Dublin, just about Jordan's own height, but thicker, heavier in the torso and limbs. His jowly face almost always displayed a quizzical little smile, as though the ways of his fellow humans amused him slightly, or puzzled him. Thornberry was wearing a loudly patterned open-necked shirt hanging over rumpled trousers. He looked as if he'd just come in from an afternoon picnic. "And a very pleasant good morning to you, sir," said Jordan. And he thought, I'll wait until they're all here, the whole team together. No sense breaking the news 11 separate times. Well, we made it, Thornberry said, jabbing a finger toward the wall screen. It's uncanny, isn't it? Jordan said. It could be Earth's twin. Thornberry shrugged. It is what it is. Heading toward the dispensing machines, he added, I'll let the scientists argue about how the planet could be so Earth-like. Me, all I've got to do is set up a working base down there on the surface and tend to me robots. Pecking at the food dispensers, Thornberry pulled out a thick sandwich of beef cultured from the biovats and a tall glass of chilled fruit juice. They should have packed some beer aboard for us, he grumbled as he brought his tray to the table where Jordan was sitting. No alcoholic beverages, Jordan reminded him. The health and safety experts agreed on that. Ah, Thornberry growled. A bunch of pissant academics with water in their veins. Jordan smiled at the Irishman. Then he remembered that he, too, was hungry. He went to the dispensers and picked a salad from the ship's hydroponics garden. Then he returned to his cooling tea and sat down beside Thornberry. Wasn't your hair darker? Thornberry asked, his thick brows knitting. It was, said Jordan, unconsciously fingering his mustache. Do you feel all right? Yes. Fairly normal, Jordan replied as he sat down next